Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat in the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pedersen scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Welcome to Canucks Central, the show with the Canucks name. That's going to be about Canucks during the Canucks training camp. Yes, no longer is social distance central. I am Vic Nizar. With me is Jamie Dodd, who is the producer on the Scott Rintoul show. Man, it's been a lot of fun doing the social distance central. We've covered a lot of content over the past couple of months. And yet, we finally made it, Jamie.
We're here. We're back. I didn't even realize that we were transitioning back to Canucks Central until I heard the intro there and the music. That was exciting. That got me fired up.
We like to keep a lot of secrets here. It felt like it was time. So no more of the great COVID intro that I was doing. Yes, obviously we're still dealing with COVID-19 and do your social distancing and all that. But as far as the show goes, we are now Canucks Central. And look, training camp is back. The players are on the ice. So there's lots to get into today, and we're really busy today. We're going to hear from Brendan Batchelor because the players are just getting off the ice, at least the first group, which was the main group. It's mainly Black Aces in the second group. So we'll hear from Batch. We'll wrap up Game of Takes from what happened last week. Also today at 12:30, Vancouver Canucks general manager Jim Benning will meet with media, of course, via Zoom. So no scrums, none of that, no press conference, none of that. So we will air that live here with you on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. So that's coming up at 12:30. But until then, Jamie, lots to get into. So look, like training camp has started. It's real now. We are finally here. And pretty much for the most part, what you would expect as far as line combinations and whatnot. But the big news of the day, Michael Ferland was deemed unfit to play. And this is part of the phase three, phase four protocols, that a term we're going to hear a lot from across the NHL. The Leafs said so with Timothy Liljegren as well. Unfit to play. You'll hear that a lot. It's been designated for Michael Ferland.
It's disappointing for Ferland, especially since all of the news we'd heard in the pause was very positive sounding about his readiness to participate in training camp and potentially help the Canucks here. But I also got to say, I don't think the NHL's new protocol is doing them any favors in this situation because, you know, Michael Ferland is not just your normal player who had been in the lineup and playing all year, right? He has a larger conversation about his health surrounding him, and I think it does a disservice to everyone who follows this team not to provide a little bit more clarity on the situation, because it could be something as simple as, hey, just because of what he's been through this year, we're going to take it really, really slow with him, and we don't want to put him through the paces that we're going to put everyone else through on day one of training camp. That could be it, but because all they're allowed to say is unfit to play, we're left with all these questions. So it is disappointing. But you also have to keep in mind that we have no idea exactly what is going on with Michael Ferland. That's frustrating. We should also avoid leaping to the worst case scenario with Ferland.
Yeah. And look, we saw him on the ice, all that. It might just be their designation for it right now. It's a tricky situation because I do get both sides of the argument, right? The NHL wanting to protect the names of the players who dealing with COVID-19 and just kind of doing a blanket approach. I get that idea, but you're right. Like there's an element to this that fans would like to know what the actual issue is, and media would obviously like to know because it does matter to some degree to be able to have the conversation of, okay, what is the player actually dealing with and what are the remedies to overcome it in this situation, obviously with Michael Ferland's concussion history. Like, does it speak to a bigger issue?
Exactly. It would be great to know that. And, you know, it's hard to say, every player is going to be different on this, but how would it even be better from a Canucks perspective, just for them to be clear about it, if they were allowed to by the NHL, so that everyone was on the same page and everyone knew what was going on? Because, you know, Jim Benning is going to speak to the media here at 12:30, and you know the first question is going to be about Michael Ferland, or one of the first questions is going to be about Michael Ferland, and it's going to be awkward because he's not going to be able to provide more details. I understand that as someone who works in the media, you know, I have skin in the game on this NHL protocol, so to speak, but it does seem a little counterproductive, and then it's just going to result in a lot more speculation, a lot more questions, and a lot more awkwardness and uncertainty than if they allow teams to be a bit more clear on their injury reporting.
Let's head to Rogers Arena now. As some members of the media are allowed in, including our own Brandon Batchelor, your voice of your Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Batch, how is it being at the rink again?
It's good. It's pretty strange. Apologies if I sound a little muffled because I've got my mask on here and I got to keep it on. But otherwise, yeah, we were given a temperature check on the way in. I had to fill out a health questionnaire. I have to keep our masks on at all times while we're in the rink. There's designated media seating in the bowl that's separated so that you're not too close to anyone. You can only walk into the bowl through one designated section, and then you have to walk out of the bowl through other sections. So it's, you know, very well thought through in terms of the COVID protocol of it all. And other than that, it's just nice to be back in the rink and, you know, watching what has felt, you know, like a relatively normal mid-season practice for the Canucks to this point.
Was your temperature check too hot? I'm
often described as being too hot, but luckily the temperature check was low. So, if it had been high, I wouldn't have been allowed in. So here we are.
Okay. All right, let's get to the actual camp. I think the first thing everyone would want to know is, okay, you know, what condition were the players in? Did it feel like a normal practice?
It did. It wasn't, or there hasn't yet been a bag skate or anything like that. It had more of a mid-season practice feel to it for me than it did like a first day of training camp where, you know, the drills to start were up-tempo and Travis clearly wanted the guys to get their legs going and get working. But most of the focus has been on, you know, passing and on transition and handling the puck and things like that, which you can understand because guys could be a little rusty in some of those regards. But the team skated for nearly an hour, then they all left the ice, and there's just been a scrape, and we expect that they're going to come back out onto the ice here at some point to continue this first session. There is also a second group of guys that is going to skate that are, you know, you look at the list, it's guys like Brisebois and Grajovac, the Black Aces, if you want to call them that, that are going to be, I would assume, skating here in a little bit. But up-tempo is how I would describe it, but also, you know, very similar to a lot of the practices that we cover throughout the season as well.
No real surprises in the line combinations we saw at practice today, Batch, but I got to ask, as you were typing up your tweet to let everyone know what the line combos were you just so thrilled to be back doing that, or were you dreading the all the comments asking you why player X was on the third line at this practice?
No, it's exciting, you know, and it's great to engage with our listeners too, so people have questions and people have opinions, and that's what makes covering this team in this city so great, right? Is everybody's got an opinion, everybody's got you know, emotional investment in this team. So you know, for the most part, though, the response from people on Twitter for me with the lines today has been pretty good, other than people chirping at me for not putting them in the order that they wanted them. You know, not too much of a surprise in the sense that Toffoli stays on the Pettersson line, Besser goes with the Horvat line as well.
Well, yeah, no, I know. And I was just having some fun there because I know I was excited to see your first tweet back at training camp with the line combos out there. And, you know, as I said, not really any surprises from what Travis Green put out there today. But in your mind, what are the biggest lineup decisions, or what is the biggest lineup decision that Travis Green has to make in this training camp?
Yeah, to be honest, they, for the most part, make themselves, right? If you look at the top six, that, you know, is exactly what we would have expected, as I was alluding to. The defensive pairings, you know, whether it's Oscar Fantenberg or Jordy Benn is maybe a decision you have to make on the back end, but there's a chance that Jordy Benn has to leave the club at some point here as he and his partner are expecting a child. So Fantenberg was with Stetcher today, and Benn was on the extra pairing with Chatfield, which makes sense for now because if he's going to leave, when he comes back, he has to quarantine for, I believe it is, 4 days. So in all likelihood, Fantenberg will have the leg up in that spot. And then you look at the guys who appear to be on the outside looking in the bottom six right now. Zach McEwen is one of them who, you know, could have a chance to get in. But as a younger player that isn't as proven at the NHL level as some of the other guys that are going to fit into that bottom six, right now it was Roussel, Gaudette, and Virtanen on, I guess, what you would call the third line, and then Sutter, Beagle, Mott on the fourth line. So, you know, McEwen's on the outside looking in. Erickson's on the outside looking in, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone. And then, of course, the big question, which we won't get an answer to when we speak to Jim Benning shortly here, is Michael Ferland and what his status is. But, you know, the only decision you could potentially have to make that I would characterize as difficult is if Ferland is able to get back up to speed and is pushing for a chance to get into the lineup. Then you've got to think about, you know, are you putting him in? And if so, who's coming out? Is it Mott? Is it Roussel? Do you think about a guy like Virtanen too? So that would be it for me. But for the most part, this feels like a lineup card that to some extent, you know, fills itself in for Travis Green.
I do want to touch on Zach McEwen though, because you put out the lines and, you know, he featured in the top six lines, you know, just kind of is a rotational spot, but nonetheless, like, this is a guy that, you know, got a lot of praise near the end of what was the regular season from both management and coaching alike. And it feels like when we're talking about, you know, forgotten guys of who could emerge in a playoff series, you know, his name is kind of circled in that scenario.
Yeah, he's a guy that can, you know, bring some energy and physical presence in that bottom six. So certainly if they have an injury or if they want a spark or if someone's underperforming, you know, he's a guy that can push to make his way into the lineup. And, you know, make no mistake about it, there's a lot made of the Canucks salary cap issues going forward. Zach McEwen is a guy they're going to need beyond this season in their bottom six, just as someone that's affordable at that spot in the lineup when you compare, you know, some of the other contracts they've got in that bottom six, whether it's Erickson or Sutter or Beagle. The fact that they can have a guy making not a lot of money that could be an impact player in that bottom six is going to be important for them. But right now, it seems like, again, he could have a chance to get in. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he plays, especially if there's an injury, especially if it's on the right side in the bottom six. But as a young guy that isn't as battle-tested at the NHL level, when you're, you know, preparing your guys for your first playoff series as an organization in 5 years and trying to get past the Minnesota Wild, you can understand Travis Green likely wanting to lean more on experience.
First time we've seen Jacob Markstrom back in Canucks colors in some time. Just your initial impressions of how he looked?
Yeah, he looked fine. Like, you know, it's a pretty standard practice, so you can't necessarily glean too much from anything. But, you know, both goaltenders, Markstrom and Demko, seem to be in standard form. They were out early working with some of the coaches, taking some shots, and then fully participating in the practice beyond that. And we are seeing some of that first group trickle back out onto the ice here now after the scrape at Rogers Arena. So we'll see what Travis Green has in store for them for the second half of their session here. And maybe we'll get a little bit of a bag skate too. We'll have to wait and see.
Bat, you mentioned the Black Aces skating out there in the second group. Some interesting names among that list, guys like Cole Lind, Olli Levy. I don't anticipate seeing them get into any game situation unless there is a serious injury situation. But let's say that does happen and Travis Green has to dip into the Black Aces pool. Is there a player in that group that you think could theoretically provide an impact for the Canucks if they're called on?
I mean, it's so hard to predict, and you're right. The chances of one of those guys getting in is pretty minimal. They've already got, you know, eight defensemen and 14 forwards in the first group. So what stood out for me in that regard is that Jalen Chatfield was the guy they chose to be in the first group, and Guillaume Brisebois and Brogan Rafferty, from a defensive perspective, along with Ole Olevi, are in the second group. So you would tend to think that if they have a couple injuries on the back end, it might be Jalen Chatfield that gets the opportunity. You know, I missed mentioning Ashton Sautner, who's also going to be in that second group. But for the most part, you know, Cole Lind was an addition here with Sven Berchi opting out. You know, Justin Bailey is a guy that they used a little bit at the NHL this year. Tyler Graevac maybe would be a candidate to get in down the middle if they had a couple of injuries at that position, because you look at the extra guys they have in the first group right now, which are Erickson and McEwen, and they're both wingers. So if you have an injury to, you know, a Jay Beagle, or, you know, Brandon Sutter's playing the wings, so he could move into the middle, so that could be an option too. But, you know, with all these names being listed, the reality that any of them, A, get a chance to play, and then B, are able to have any sort of significant impact, is probably, the likelihood is not very high, in my opinion anyway.
He is Brendan Batchelor, the voice of your Vancouver Canucks here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Batch, thank you. Get back to group two here.
Yep, thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Brendan Batchelor, you can follow him at Batch Hockey and tweet him your questions of why certain players are on certain lines. Always appreciated. It's Bick Nizar and Jamie Dodd here on Canucks Central. Your thoughts always welcome, 650, 650. We've always appreciated your interaction, including throughout the last little while, including Game of Takes, which we've done over the weekend once again. And we will have to announce our winner right now. So let's play the intro for Game of Takes.
When you play the Game of Takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
If a lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of a sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
Rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bick.
I drink, and I know things.
And Batch.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Valar Morghulis.
It was a spirited debate over the weekend from Jeremy and from Malkin. Malcolm, hats off to both of them for putting up great takes. Of course, we now put a bow on the team playoffs, team draft, Jamie. And big shout out to Jeremy, who will be walking away and sitting atop the composite throne for a week here on Game of Takes.
Shout out to Jeremy. Way to go, man.
Yeah, and so here's what we're going to do. Jeremy couldn't join us today, busy at work, which, hey, man, we respect the hustle. So we are going to present this week's topic and then go to break. We'll try to break early because Jim Banning's press conference coming up at 12:30. This week's topic, cap space has been a hot topic the last 10 days in the city. So instead of debating two different sides, we're going to present it to you. Present your solutions for the cap space. Don't have to talk about what previously happened. How do you get out of this scenario? So you get 2 minutes. Reply to us on Twitter at Sportsnet650. If you are one of the people chosen, we'll give you your chance to share your take versus Jeremy. So that's this week's Game of Takes topic. Jamie, you and I will certainly break it down throughout the week, but I've maintained the point that it's bad, but it's correctable.
Listen, they're going to have to make some hard decisions. That's the long and the short of it. And this is, you know what, they're not alone in that by any means. When you look around the NHL with a flat cap, there's going to be a lot of teams that have to make some tough decisions. And I do think these next couple of years are going to be really when Jim Benning cements his legacy one way or the other in Vancouver, because there is a way out. This is not an impossible situation where the Canucks are, you know, destined to enter a cycle of mediocrity for another 5 years because of their cap problems. That's not the case. There are ways to solve these issues, but it's going to involve some hard decisions. It's going to involve making, you know, what at the time might be unpopular decisions. And there's also going to be a bit of luck, as there is in everything to do with sports, right? Even general managers need a bit of luck on their side. you know, you look at something like the good Branson for Tanner Pearson trade. I don't want to call it lucky because it was a great trade, but you know, if Pittsburgh knew what was going to happen with Tanner Pearson and what was going to happen with Eric Branson, they don't make that trade. So you need some things like that to go your way. And as I said, there's going to be some tough decisions to make, but to your point, yes, this is correctable. Jim Benning's just got his work cut out for him.
Well, so we invite your thoughts. 650, 650, also at Sportsnet 650. We'll put up that that tweet and your chance to reply in just a little while. So we'll go to break now on Canuck Central. Jim Benning meeting with media up at 12:30. We'll carry that live for you here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back. Yes, it is Canucks Central on Sportsnet 650. Thank you for indulging the time with social distance Central. But with the Canucks back on the ice, the big show is back, Canucks Central. And, you know, it served as a reminder that, hey, we're not out of this for some time. So continue with your efforts of, you know, social distancing, washing hands, all of that, and keep that up as we continue to live in this pandemic world. But some normalcy returned to the ice today as the Canucks started their training camp and many NHL teams started their training camp today as we get ready for August 1st when teams are back ready to play some playoff games or play-in games, at least, Jamie.
Yeah, it's incredible, really, that we're even talking about training camp in the middle of July. I mean, our world has changed so much over the last few months, but I still can't quite get over that one. Like, we're really doing this. We're really going to get this going in the middle of summer. It's incredible, really.
It will take some time to get used to, but yeah, it's just the new normal, right? Like, that's the phrase. It's the new normal. We're waiting for a couple of minutes. We're going to hear from Jim Benning, who's going to join media to jump on a call with them on a Zoom call, of course, because media members, including Batch, who we just spoke to at Rogers Arena, have to adhere to social distancing. So that's the other new normals. They will talk via Zoom call, and we'll air that for you in its entirety coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Obviously, one of the things that he's going to get asked about is Michael Ferland, who was not on the ice at training camp. He was deemed unfit to play is the term you'll hear from a lot of NHL teams. So that's going to be one of the first questions. But as Batch kind of alluded to, probably won't get the answer we want because there's kind of the easy out for all general managers and coaches to suggest, hey, it's part of the phase 3, phase 4 protocols. We're just going to label him unfit to play.
Well, and in fact, if Jim Benning does give us more details, I think he's going to get a call from the NHL head office saying, hey, what are you doing, man? We had an agreement here. You're not supposed to give out more details. So I'd be very surprised. I think he'll just leave it at that, which is frustrating, as we said last segment, because with Michael Ferland, it's not just, hey, I want to know if he has a hamstring or not or whatever. It's I want to know what the state of his health is out of just concern for him as a person, mm-hmm. even beyond anything on the ice.
There's a couple of questions coming in. Just what happens in the cap situation for Michael Ferland if he can't play and ends up retiring. Look, retirement's different than him just staying on the cap and not playing, it being LTIR. So, look, there's a lot of different ways this could go down. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, though, right? So the idea of retirement and all that, first and foremost, this would be about Michael Ferland's health. Those conclusions, I understand wanting to have that discussion, very premature though, and we'll wait to see how this transpires as in the weeks to come and also, you know, heading into the off season. Because if there is a conclusion, we are still some time away from seeing what that might be.
You're right. That's very well said, because it's so easy and we spend so much time, you know, especially in the last couple of weeks here, talking about the future of the Canucks and the Canucks salary cap situation and, oh, how can they free up a little bit more room? And it's natural and it's understandable. And I don't judge anyone for starting to think, well, if Ferland's not going to be around, what does that do for the cap? I get that. But I do think we should keep the focus on his health as a person, his future as a player, and also just, you know, as someone with a family, someone who wants to be healthy for a long time yet after they finish playing hockey. As you said, a long way away from a resolution. Having said that, you know, again, I don't want to use loaded language or say, you know, this is a last chance for Michael Froeland or anything like that, but it's going to be a big, big setback if the same health issues that plagued him all season keep him out of this tournament. When all the news we had was, hey, he's ready, he's going to be able to play in this, that's going to be a really, really tough setback. Doesn't mean he can't get better in the future, doesn't mean he can't still figure in the Canucks plans, but it's going to be really disappointing, I'm sure, for Ferland, for the team, and for fans.
Yeah, it's a setback for him in the immediate, right? And I mean, to be honest, like, it wasn't that long ago, like, in the idea of recovering from concussions, I understand it's like, oh, you've had 4 months off, you should have been able to recover. Like, man, we're still learning so much. I've dealt with my fair share, so I'm more sensitive, I think, than usual of recovering from concussions. If he needs more time, he needs more time.
Oh,
it's that simple.
I get that, and I'm not saying, oh, he should be ready by now. My point is more, because we've heard, oh, hey, it's ready, he's going so well, that if he's not ready, it will feel like a setback. If we'd never heard any of that, you know, when the season went on pause, I was not thinking at all, oh, when this restarts, maybe Michael Ferland will be able to play. That wasn't on my radar at all. It was only once we started hearing those reports, seeing him even skating with his teammates, that you started to think it might be real. So I totally take your point. Every concussion is different. We're still learning. You have to be cautious with them. And just because he's not in this tournament doesn't mean he'll never play again. But I do think it's inescapable, but it's a disappointment and it's a setback given what we were hearing just a few weeks ago.
And like, this is his decision, essentially. Yep. If he wants to continue to try to play, as much as we in the media and fans may say, man, this feels irresponsible. If he feels he's able to, then okay, that's a different conversation. So the idea of retirement and cap implications and all that, look, the onus is going to be upon him. If he feels he can play, then down the line, maybe we will see him. I know there's a call from people to say maybe the decision should get taken out of his hands. Like, I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that to take the, you can provide him with all the information available to say, hey, look, like, these are the dangers, but ultimately the decision still lies in his hands, much in the same way we're talking about these leagues. Technically, they deserve an opportunity to come back. The same opportunity should be afforded to him.
Yeah, it's a complicated discussion because the team doctors and the team itself, but especially the medical staff, they do have a responsibility. If a player is in a bad situation, to say, we cannot let you participate in this because it's so dangerous for you.
Yes.
Now that can happen. And Michael Ferland can say, okay, but I'm going to do everything I can in my own time, training and physio and all of that, to try to get back to a position where you will clear me to play. And I think that's what you're talking about, right?
Yes. Sorry, I want to clear that up.
Yeah, for sure. So, and that's completely true. I don't see how you could argue with that. It's very similar, actually, to what we're dealing with across the league right now, with some players choosing to opt out because of COVID-19, right? It's fundamentally a personal decision, and I don't blame people. You know, like Bo Horvat talked about, yeah, I have a young family, just became a dad, I'm so excited, it's tough to leave them, but I never thought about opting out for a second because this is what I want to do. I don't judge Bo Horvat for that, and I don't judge anyone who makes the different decision in the same position. And you know, with Michael Ferland, it's just so personal. There's so much information we don't know. We don't know what discussions he's had with his family. And You're right. Ultimately, the doctors have to clear him to play, but how much effort and how much time he wants to put into getting to that point is entirely up to him.
650, your thoughts. Always welcome. Keep them coming in. Scott in New West, I think we should be grieved the Luongo recapture penalty. Now, if Ferland goes on LTIR, they are stuck in a bind. We'll touch on more of that. We're still waiting for Jim Benning to meet with media. Ferland will certainly be a topic of discussion, but I imagine will be quickly dismissed. Furthermore, one of the things that happened at camp today, we briefly mentioned it with Batch, Zach McEwen, an interesting name. And, you know, he started to rise to some prominence as the season came to a close because he started featuring a bit more higher up in the lineup. And also he was, starting to show some production. And he had a brief run, a brief spell last year. And it certainly looked like he developed over the course of the season in the AHL. Now, when he comes onto the ice today, he is rotating with the top two lines. Perhaps, you know, he's just the extra guy, and that's where they got him in. But, you know, certainly an indication he got a lot of praise near the end of the season from Travis Green. It potentially, is this someone that can build upon a nice playoffs into something greater down the road?
Yeah, the caveat with training camp is always, you know, don't read too much into it, especially not too much into day one. I think that all applies here. The difference with Zach MacEwen is this is all just a continuation of what you mentioned, which is Travis Green being quite open about his praise. And Travis Green has even said, listen, Zach MacEwen's an NHL player now. He's not a call-up guy. He's not a guy we go to when we have injuries. He's an NHL player. He's part of the group. And looking forward, you know, does that mean you pencil him into the lineup for game one of Minnesota? I don't know, just because this team does still have a surplus of forwards. And of course, someone like Michael Ferland's health is a big part of that as well. I think what it definitely means, though, is when you're looking at next training camp, whenever that may be, you're penciling him into the group. You're penciling him in as Zach MacEwen is going to make the team. He is ahead of, you know, Louis Erickson, for example. He's ahead of other guys. He has a presumptive spot on the team. And for a guy like Zach MacEwen, I mean, that's a big deal. That's a really, really big milestone in his career to just be, yeah, you're an NHL player. There's no question about that anymore.
650, your thoughts keep coming in. Just having a technical glitch here with the press conference. So we'll get to that as soon as it is remedied. But Jim Benning starting to meet with media. And just a couple of quotes here. Just talk about how exciting it is to get back on the ice. And, of course, did mention the return to play. Okay, now we can go to General Manager Jim Benning.
Family advisor and his family, you know, what he wants to do moving forward. If he wants to turn pro, then, you know, we'll talk to him and interact with him and get a contract done with him. But till he decides to do that, you know, there's not much I can say on him. And on Q's and PD, I have no comment on any of that right now. We have, you know, I'm excited to get back playing today. You know, the guys look good. We want to finish this season strong, and, you know, we want to have a good showing in the playoffs, I believe, in this group. And then, you know, we got some unrestricted guys that, you know, that I want to try to talk to here as we, you know, when we're done the season. But Quinn and Petey have, you know, they have a contract for another year, so I'm not going to worry about them right now.
And Jim, just one more from me. At some point today, or if you haven't done it so already, you guys will have to submit your traveling list for the bubble. Do you plan on going there? And is there any detail you can share about what your traveling party will consist of as your club moves into phase four?
Yeah, I'm going to be part of the 52 names we're going to submit. And, you know, looking forward to getting in there and getting going. You know, play Minnesota here, and, you know, I thought they finished off real strong, and we're going to have to be at our best. But it's nice to see our team healthy. I just was watching practice, and, you know, very rarely do we see, for the most part, we have all our players out there. So it's nice to see our group healthy, and I'm looking forward to, you know, the series against Minnesota.
And just the last one from me, Jim, you know, do you have a sense, as you guys prepare to play meaningful games even later in the season than you'd perhaps expected, do you have a sense, is there like a why not us when you think about some of the sort of makeup that your club has going into this 2014 format?
Sorry, you broke up there for it. Can you say it again? I missed you, Thomas.
As you gauge your club's chances in a 24-team format, do you have a sense of why not us? Like, do you think there are sort of reasons to believe that you guys can maybe outperform expectations here? And if so, what are they?
Well, I think, you know, we haven't really been healthy the whole season. And so now, you know, for the most part, we're going to be missing Josh Levo, but Furley will be back here at some point. And, you know, I think we're going to head into this playoff series healthy. I like the makeup of our group, like from our young skilled players to, you know, we got a good mix of some players that can shoot the puck and got skill on their top two lines. And our third and fourth line guys are, we got some hardworking character guys that can kill penalties and add to our group. So I like the overall mix of our group, and I'm excited, you know, to see them play here through training camp, and excited to get started in that series against Minnesota.
Thanks, Jim.
Great. Thanks. Next, we'll go to Ben Kuzma.
Hey, Jim, you said a couple of things there. One thing about Ferland, I know in talking to you and Travis recently, Ferland's very intriguing from a perspective of perhaps being a wild card in the postseason. You just sort of said that you kind of expect them back soon. I know you can't comment too much, but is there a reason for alarm here in terms of why he's unfit to play?
No. Okay. I would say no to that. I can't add anything more to that, but we're following some protocols that have been outlined by the league, but he'll be back here. He's been skating. He feels good. But you know, it's more safety than anything else. So, but when he gets back, you know, outside of Josh, we'll have our full group.
Safety would seem to indicate that, you know, one thing that you guys don't have to divulge, Jim, is there may be a positive test. I know that would lead us to speculation here, but if you're telling us there's a chance he's going to be coming back soon, I guess we will have to speculate on that, I would imagine.
Yeah, our like the verbiage that the NHL and the Players Association agreed upon is, not fit to play, and I'm not going to expand on that.
What makes you have such a strong stance and those rumors that were flying around on the weekend, Jim, about you're supposedly interested in possibly exploring a Brock Besser trade? I know he's still a young player. He's under contract. He's been through a few things. Why do you feel so adamantly strong that he's a part of your future?
Well, because it's hard to find guys that can shoot the puck and score like he can. You can find other pieces as you rebuild your team, but guys that are natural goal scorers, and, you know, I don't know, like, we've been happy with him since we drafted him, since we signed him, since he's played, you know, pro for us. He's been a good player, so I don't know where this stuff comes from, but I have no intention of trading Brock Besser.
Does it bother you a little bit from the sense that when people speculate like that, if you're going to get rid of a top six forward, how are you supposed to magically replace a top six forward? I think that's what had some of us wondering, you know, scratching our heads a bit.
Yeah, well, I was scratching my head too, because there's no basis. I haven't had one conversation with, you know, anybody else in the league concerning that. So, like I said before, I don't know where this stuff comes from.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks. Next up, we have Ian McIntyre.
Hey, Jim. Are you still in the three-day window where you can sign Jack Rathbone and it counts as a year against him, or is that window closed?
No, the window officially starts on Monday and ends on Wednesday. So I guess, you know, it opened up today and it goes through Wednesday. So we have time.
Okay. So are you, I know you didn't want to say much about it, but are you optimistic? Do you think you've established a relationship the club has with Rathbone?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, between Ryan Johnson and Chris Higgins, like, they've, you know, worked with Jack and developed a relationship with him. You know, we've talked to Jack, but ultimately that's going to be a decision that he and his family make, and we'll support whatever decision he makes. Now, if he decides he wants to stay another year in school, then, you know, we'll try to get him signed after next year. But if he phones us up and tells us that he's ready to turn pro, then we'll work with him to get him signed and we can get him in here.
The last one, I know that you guys just signed Will Lockwood this offseason, and he had the option to wait you out and become a free agent. Are you concerned at all with Jack Rathbone, given the level of interest there is from other teams in him, that if you don't get him signed now and he decides to go back to school for another year, he might exercise that option for himself and you lose him next summer?
Well, that's an option that he has. That's why I think, you know, what we try to do when we draft these players, we establish a relationship with them through, you know, our people that are out in the field. And so when they do decide to turn pro, like, we'll talk to, you know, him and his family, and we'll give him, you know, the kind of the breakdown of where we think he fits in our group moving forward. And ultimately it's going to be, you know, if he plays one more year of school, that'll be up to him to decide. Now, you know, I hope that, you know, we've done a good job with our interactions with the players, and, you know, they understand, and the young players that we have right now in the system and the rebuilding that we've done, that they're going to be part of a group that we think is going to be real successful going forward, that they want to be part of our organization. So, you know, this is something that, you know, that's important to us, and we talk about it. And, you know, right when we draft these players, that we start working with them and developing them and getting them ready to be Vancouver Canucks at some point.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks.
Next up, Carol Schramm.
In some ways, I feel like this morning must have felt very familiar, like you're picking up where you left off in March, just with a slightly healthier roster. But I feel like from where you were sitting and being masked up and socially distanced from the rest of your staff, how do you communicate together while the practices are going on? And how did it feel familiar, or did it feel weird today?
I felt different. And I think, you know, that's what we talk about, you know, as a group, things aren't going to be like per se normal, like they're going to be a little bit different. And we feel like the teams that can, you know, can react to, you know, things that come up and, you know, just go out there and keep working hard and competing, that, you know, can get through the differences that are going to happen along the way. And it's no different with us in hockey ops. Like, you know, there's going to be some things that happen that, you know, we're going to have to step back and figure out, and it's not going to be normal, but, you know, that's the way we've been living the last 4 months, and I don't think it's going to change, you know, going forward.
Great. And one of the unusual advantages, I guess, that this summer camp is offering is a chance for you to get a look at your Black Aces and see what they can do. Is there anybody that you're particularly excited to get a chance to watch through training camp over the next while?
Well, I think it's going to be a great opportunity for those players that are in that group, because, you know, as we, you know, integrate those guys with our NHL team, and, you know, whether it's through some scrimmages or whatever, that it'll be good experience for them. And, you know, we really didn't get a chance to do development camp this summer. So I look at that as, you know, part of their experience of development camp and, you know, and continuing to get better and moving forward as players.
Great. Thanks so much.
Next up, we have Jim Morris.
I'm just wondering, how confident are you with some of the other leagues that are going on? Am I good? With some of the other leagues that are going on are having trouble. Major League Soccer is having trouble. And NBA is having trouble. How confident are you this whole tournament is going to work at Edmonton?
Well, I, you know, like, we're like everybody else. We're, you know, we got strict protocols that we're trying to follow. You know, there's guidelines and rules that the players have to get used to. And, you know, they've been patient in you know, instituting those rules and guidelines that have been laid out in front of them. And, you know, and it's going to be like with all the people around the team too. So I think that if we're, you know, we're diligent and, you know, in following the rules and regulations, that, you know, we'll be able to get into the bubble. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, we don't have problems once we get into the bubble, and that we'll be able to play the games and finish this year out and, you know, get to the playoffs. So, You know, the NHL, the league, and the PA has worked really hard to set up all these protocols with the doctors, and you know, we've gone over with our players, our doctors have gone over with our players, and to educate our players. So I'm confident that, you know, we can pull this off, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see once we get there and how it works, you know, and see if we're gonna have problems or not.
Thank you. I just have one quick question. Sven Barche made the decision not to participate in this camp. Your thoughts on a player making that decision for whatever reason?
Well, we respect Sven's decision. You know, each player has their own concerns and worries and, you know, makes decisions based on their particular circumstance. And, you know, Sven didn't feel comfortable, so we support him 100%. And, you know, and the times and what's going on right now, like, it is what it is. But, you know, like I said, we respect and support him.
Thank you very much.
Next, we have Josh Clipperton.
Hey, Jim, thanks for doing this. Sorry if you already were asked this. You're going to be in the bubble, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so for you, like, how hard is that going to be? I know the players can have families after the second round if you guys go on a run, but there won't be family for front office staff as far as I'm aware. And also, you know, a lot of people that would have helped you along the way with this organization won't be in the building if, you know, something special happens. How have you thought about that and how tough that could be?
Well, you know, like in this, like, we have to make, you know, sacrifices in, you know, this whole thing. Like I said, things, you know, aren't normal, and there's going to be things that come up. Now, we can exchange people in the 52 person bubble. You know, they'll have to quarantine once they come into the bubble, but we can make changes. And, you know, it's, you know, like, we, you know, I've sat down with all the people that, you know, aren't going to be coming with us to Edmonton and just explained to them, you know, why we made the decisions that we made. And everybody's been understanding of it. And, you know, we want the team to do well, and we want the players to be looked after, and, you know, the safety measures and stuff. So we've made decisions based on those things.
And just in your experience watching hockey, I mean, AHL, the first round is five games. Is there anything you can take away from that and how a five-game series is a different animal? I know Travis obviously has experience with five-game series as a coach, but just what he could be in for and the difference between the two?
Well, I don't know really what to expect because, you know, the players have been off for, like, once we get back up and going again, it's been 5 months since they played a game. So I know we got one exhibition game scheduled, but I think it's going to be the teams that, you know, can have good training camps and to come out and play with structure and discipline, you know, in that first round that are going to end up having success. And I know in Travis's planning for this and for training camp, like, that's something that he's going to be concentrating on. We know Minnesota's a well-coached team that, you know, they play with good structure. So, you know, we're going to, you know, do prepare and get ready for, you know, a five-game series. And we're going to, you know, play every game hard. We're going to compete our hardest and work. And, you know, there'll be times when, you know, things get uncomfortable. We might get down in a game or we might get down in the series, but we're going to have to just keep working and fighting our way through it. And, you know, hopefully things turn out okay for us.
Great. Thanks for doing this.
Next, we have Jay Janauer.
Jim, good afternoon. There's been so much time between the last game that you played and when you'll play your next one. I would have to think that you guys have done a lot of brainstorming just to how this playoffs, this tournament's going to shake down and how quickly you have to get up and running. I know you just talked about structure during a five-game series, but what is your mindset, you know, and Travis's in regards to the team that you'll ice and the style that you want to play? Because you'd have to think with a tournament this short and coming up so quick that you'd want a young, youthful, fast, talented, skilled team, which kind of fits your bill.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, we talked about, you know, like, the one thing that Travis has tough training camps, and our teams always seem to come out of the gate and get off to good starts. And, you know, this is going to have to be no different. Like, if we, you know, when we get playing these games against many, we're going to have to be at our best right off the hop, because if we're not, and you get down in games and down in the series, it's going to be hard to come back. So, you know, we're going to, you know, we're going to be ready. We're going to be prepared. Travis is, had a lot of time to think about and watch, you know, the opponent that we're playing and break them down and, you know, simplify things to our players. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be how we play and how we perform. And I know talking to our players, they're excited about this opportunity. You know, it's not a, every day that you get a chance to play in a series to make the playoffs. And then, you know, when you make the playoffs, anything can happen. So I like the mix of our team. Like I've said, I think we have a good combination of young, youthful exuberance and some veteran guys that, you know, have been through the wars before that can help our young players. So I'm looking forward to playing the games and see how we end up doing in the end.
Jim, there's always the argument about experience and, you know, you really need the experience to win a Stanley Cup. But when you look at your roster, your MVP has been Jacob Markstrom. He's been great for you the last 2 years. You got a young, rested Quinn Hughes. You got Brock Besser, who looked really good on the ice this morning. You've got Bo Horvat. I mean, I could keep on going on and on. Do we put too much into the whole experience thing, Stanley Cup playoffs? And maybe could that be different with this style of playoff compared to years past, because we've never seen this before?
Well, I think, yeah, but I think you're right. It's going to be like a tournament style almost where, you know, once we get going, we're going to be playing every second night here. So it's, you know, it's going to be, I like the depth of our team. Like, I feel like we have five lines of guys that can step in and play and help contribute to winning. I like, you know, the players that we've called up that are black aces, you know, have some experience playing in the league. And so if they're called upon, I think they can step in and do a good job for us. So, you know, I think this is something where, you know, and with, who knows, like with sickness and stuff, if we get a couple guys out, I feel like we can put guys in and, you know, depending on which players are out, I think we can, you know, be competitive. And so I'm looking forward to it. And I like our group. I like the team we've put together. I like the depth, and we'll see where we end up.